I grew up loving my local library. I got Judy's attention. It was about half a block from my house, and I spent a lot of time there. Sometimes I was digging through the card catalog system to find the exact book I needed for an assignment, and then using the Dewey Decimal System to go find it on the shelf. I'm looking to see those who are like, oh, yeah. Some are smiling. Some are like having flashbacks, nightmares. But other times I would just walk through the aisles looking for something interesting about like ninjas or guitars or the Canadian Armed Forces in Italy, things that I was interested in. The library was an institution in my community. But over time, what libraries were being used for started to shift and change. What was no longer fit with what needed to be, and so changes had to be made. Locals here are familiar with this story. Take, for example, the Penetanguishene Library, Carnegie Library structure, you see there on the left. At some point, it didn't really work properly anymore for what they needed to be, and so they opted for a relatively small addition, which is now the primary face of the library that you go into. That's not alone. The Midland Library was also a Carnegie Library. It was housed in a very similar building. It's the one you see here on the left. They decided that renovating wasn't a viable option for that, and so the library got rid of that building and took over the old post office. And then eventually that post office didn't work anymore, and so they opted for a really big addition on the side of it. My favorite example of a library's need for change and a creative approach to what to do with it is the one I actually went to growing up, the Hespler Public Library. It was also a Carnegie Library. It looked very similar to the ones in Penetang and Midland. When it didn't cut it anymore, rather than doing an addition onto it, they did an addition around it. They actually enclosed it in a big glass building and expanded it out on all sides. And that glass structure allows everyone to see the original structure inside, but that original structure is protected by this new external building and made radically different and radically increased the size and functionality of the space. Something happens when things have been around for a while, whether it's something like a building, like a library building, or even organizational structures in churches. You know, the longer things last, the less what it was helps to serve what it is now or what it needs to become. And when it becomes clear that what is no longer being served by what was, there's hard choices that have to be made. Changes need to be made, and navigating those changes can be hard. I will say it's even harder when people aren't aware that a change is needed, or if a change comes that we don't like. When Jesus showed up in the world, he came changing everything. But most people didn't know it, and a lot of people didn't want it. In the story we're looking at today, Jesus is announcing to everyone that a change is here. The question they faced, and one we still need to consider, is whether or not we'll accept the change that Jesus brings and participate in it. We're in John chapter 2. We're picking it up at verse 13. When it was almost time for the Jewish Passover, Jesus went up to Jerusalem. In the temple courts, he found people selling cattle, sheep, and doves, and others sitting at tables exchanging money. So he made a whip out of cords and drove all from the temple courts, both sheep and cattle. He scattered the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables. To those who sold doves, he said, "Get out of here! Stop turning my father's house into a market." His disciples remembered that it is written, "Zeal for your house will consume me." The Jews then responded to him, "What sign can you show us to prove your authority to do all this?" Jesus answered them, "Destroy this temple, and I will raise it again in 3 days." They replied, "It has taken us 46 years to build this temple, and you're going to raise it in 3 days?" But the temple he had spoken of was his body. After he was raised from the dead, the disciples recalled what he had said. Then they believed the scripture and the words that Jesus had spoken. Now, while he was in Jerusalem at the Passover festival, many people saw the signs he was performing and believed in his name. But Jesus would not entrust himself to them, for he knew all people. We're just going to talk about a few things in this passage. First, I'll highlight that if you read this versus reading how the story and when the story is told in what we call the Synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, it's very different. In those Gospels, when Jesus disrupts the temple, it happens near the end of the story. John tells it here for a reason. And there's a couple things. I just want to highlight what is here, not trying to mix it with the other ones, but what is John highlighting here? Jesus shows up, and so far, all he has done is change water into wine, something that actually only very few people know that he did. As far as anybody's concerned, this is Jesus' first public ministry event. Talk about making a splash. He walks into the temple as they're getting ready for the Passover, and then basically flips the table. Like, just understand, the tables that they had there were because people were coming from all over the world to come and make sacrifices at the temple. You're traveling from North Africa or from up in Babylon. You can't travel with your sacrifices. And even if you could, the sacrifices were supposed to be without blemish, without spot. And the chances of your sacrifice getting harmed somewhat on the way and no longer being without blemish is pretty high. And so they're actually doing something that's providing a service to worshipers by saying, okay, you need this as a part of your worship, and so we're going to help you facilitate your worship. There is nothing in John's telling that indicates that they were ripping people off, even. There's some hints in the other passages that maybe there is some shady business going on, but that's not in John's passage. He doesn't show any concern about that. But Jesus walks into this thing that, I mean, it's their worship. It's the most important season of the year for them. It's what they're used to. It's what they know. It's what's expected. As far as they're concerned, this is what God requires of us. And Jesus walks in and completely undoes it. He flips it upside down and he kicks them out of the house and house of God. And he has this really interesting exchange with, again, John uses the shorthand, these called the Jews. And just to be clear again, I mentioned this before, this is not all Jewish people. This is John's shorthand for the religious leaders. Okay? Jesus has this exchange with them. The Jews come to Jesus. They're obviously shaken by what's happened. He tells them, you know, get out of here. Stop turning this into a market, into an emporium, into this place of sales. Stop turning it into that. And they come to Jesus and say, okay, basically, what credentials, the message translates it this way, what credentials can you present to justify this? Like, what's your basis for doing this? And Jesus responds with a very strange, destroy this temple, and I will raise it again in 3 days. They counter, it's taken us 46 years to build this thing. You're going to do it in 3 days? And then John moves into this aside, like, oh, wait, this was about Jesus' body. He's talking about his resurrection. He's building something completely different than this temple. In this moment, Jesus is making a statement about God's heart. I just want to talk about this for a little bit. First is this statement where he tells the people selling things, you know, get out of here. Stop turning my father's house into a market. Again, there's nothing about abusive marketplace practices, but he's saying people shouldn't have to spend their money to engage in worship. This goes completely counter to what they have learned, to what they like. They're looking back to the Old Testament. Actually, no, God says we're supposed to bring stuff, that we have to bring stuff. If we're going to come to God, we have to bring this. That's their belief. And so Jesus is completely disrupting what they're used to. We see echoes of this in obviously Micah 6:8, where God says, I don't want your sacrifices. I want you. Like, seek justice, love mercy, walk humbly with God. That's what I want from you. There's echoes of a passage we looked at earlier in the fall, Isaiah 55, when the prophet said, well, the prophet spoke for God, saying, come, all you who are weary, come to the waters, and you who have no money, come, buy and eat. Come, buy wine and milk without money and without cost. There's this sense that Jesus is accomplishing what God has been pointing for all along, or Jesus is moving forward, this longing that there won't be a marketplace associated with our engagement together with God. That we can come, no matter what we have, no matter where we're coming from, come and worship. I could spend a lot of time wrestling with the implications of the marriage of the church and business and worship and business. I invite you to think about that a little bit. But we're going to stick with something else Jesus said. Jesus, in response to their question, you know, what authority, like, what can you do to prove your authority to do all this? Jesus says, destroy this temple and I will raise it again in 3 days. Jesus, obviously, John explains, Jesus wasn't talking literally. He wasn't talking about literally building the temple. But what's interesting is before Jesus could even metaphorically rebuild something in 3 days, what had to happen? It had to be broken down. It had to be torn down. Before they could have things built as they should be, they needed to tear down what was, which seems crazy. Because this, again, it was what they expected. This was their status quo. This is what they believe God required of them. And Jesus is saying, I've got something better for you, but before you can have it, you need to tear down this thing that already is. The disciples, later on, they remembered this because they found themselves on the outs. On the outside of the Jewish community, they're like, oh, wait, this thing that we thought Jesus was coming to build, it's completely fallen apart. He wasn't the Messiah we thought. He's died. Like, what's happening? Then they look back and like, oh, we've lost what we were hoping for, but now something, the real new thing can get built. When Jesus breaks in, He comes offering something new, but often we've got to be willing to let go of what was before we can build something new. Jesus didn't come to put on an addition. Jesus didn't come to wrap what we were used to in a nice glass box so that we could see what it used to be forever. He came saying, hey, maybe you need to tear it down so that I can build what I really want to build. More often than not, we can't get to the heart of God by just doing a paint job or a remodel. There's a lot of times we need to have God tear something down in us so that what he wants to build can be built. But that is a hard thing to have happen. In human history, sometimes God building what he wanted to build has happened without a human plan. You know, things have died and a seed has grown out of what was. Other times, people have fought to hold on to this and a remnant has grown that comes back to the center of Jesus and what Jesus really wants. But the longer we're around, and what, Covenant's 46 now? the longer any person, any organization is around, sometimes the harder it is to let Jesus have his way and build what really needs to be built. Are we willing to listen to Jesus' disruption, but life-giving voice? Are we focused on building and defending temples that might seem good? It fits with the status quo. Look, we can maintain what we love. We might even be able to defend them with human logic, but they're actually limiting the breaking in of God's way in the world and people's ability to come see God. I don't know what that might be in your life, that maybe God is stirring, saying, hey, you need to move from this to this. I think often we feel God's prompting, God's stirring, that God is leading us somewhere, and we want to get there gradually. Or we want to hold on to what is, and can I just make that like an addition? But this example, this passage, Jesus says, okay, tear it down and I'll rebuild. Like, for the religious leaders, that is an act of faith that is too impossible. We can't tear it down. Even if we thought you could, to tear this down, how can we trust? How can we believe? How can we know that you're going to build this thing you say you're going to? But to a certain extent, that's a step of faith that many of us are asked to take. Some of us are here because we took a step of faith a long time ago of saying, I have had this thing and I've been fighting to hold on to it. And God, I need to be willing to actually let it go for you to do something new in my life. But I think often that's an ongoing process. What do I need to be willing to let go of or see torn down so that God can have his way in my life and in my world? Interestingly, there's two ways to read this passage. One is in Jesus' time and place. Another way is in the time and place when John is writing this. As best we know, John is writing this in the later part of the first century. And when John is writing this, the question of whether or not the temple should come down wasn't a question. Rome had, a handful of years before, leveled the temple. The temple's gone. John's hearers are reading this saying, the temple's been torn down, so what's being built now? And that's when they say, okay, this is about his body. This is about what Jesus is building through his death and resurrection. John is reminding them that the new thing is actually what Jesus was intending all along, that the temple being torn down isn't some disaster. In fact, Jesus had said, okay, tear it down, I'm going to rebuild something new. So what is Jesus building? Through his body on the cross, he has built something new to belong to. We need to often intentionally stop trying to maintain structures and temples that don't belong to what God is doing in the present. Other times, we need to hear this as a reminder and encouragement that God is doing, and God has consistently been doing, a new thing as the life of Jesus breaks into the world. There are thousands across Canada of former church buildings that are being sold off. And it's easy to lament and say, oh, look how things aren't good. God's consistently been building new things in places where the old has had to go. There's been a constant tension in human history between our desire to build temples and structures and lasting forms, whether literal or metaphorical. Tension between that and Jesus overturning tables and calling us to something new. It's natural for us to struggle with losing what has been, but this reminds us that losing what has been is not the end of what God is doing in the world. Maybe that's something we need to be reminded of personally. We need to keep that in mind as we move forward as a community, as a congregation. Perhaps leaving behind what has been is exactly what's needed for the next exciting Jesus-like thing to emerge. So be encouraged. Even when the temple has come down and you have no idea what is emerging, God is at work and Jesus is building a new thing. Let's pray. God, new can be exciting when, you know, it's our new thing or when we feel like we're in control. It can also be really hard when we feel like we're losing something that we've known, we've been comfortable with, we've been convinced that it's exactly what you've wanted. God, help us to be people individually and as a community that are open to Jesus consistently doing a new thing among us. God, I don't sit here with any sense of what the plan is long term for the future, but God, just help us to retain that posture. It says, God, breathe your life in us. And if that means things need to come down, God, help us to grieve it well, but move into the new thing, the new life. God, I thank you that this is a community that exists because people have said yes to that. May it be something we continue to do together, knowing that whatever comes, God, that you are in it as long as we keep our eyes on Jesus. Amen.